It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. International nuclear negotiations with Iran enter the final hours ahead of the latest deadline. The foreign ministers from the group of six world powers in Iran are locked in intense negotiations in Vienna, with key disputes unresolved, including a potential stumbling block involving a push by Tehran to have a UN arms embargo lifted. The diplomats try to meet a second self-imposed July 7 deadline to reach a comprehensive deal, limiting Tehran's nuclear activities in exchange for a lifting of sanctions after the June 30 original deadline came and went. Josh Earnest is a White House spokesman.
There remain some very difficult, critically important issues that are unresolved. They will not be able to reach an agreement as long as those issues remain unresolved. And that's what they're working on right now. So I wouldn't want to prejudge an outcome at this point. But I would acknowledge that we are past the deadline. We're well into these negotiations. The president and his team are prepared to walk away if Iran cannot sign on to a final agreement that reflects the kinds of commitments that they made in the context of the political agreement back in April.
Despite disagreement about lifting an arms embargo, some progress has been reported in key areas, including the pace of sanctions relief for Iran and a UN probe, and whether Iran's previous nuclear work involved trying to develop weapons. A teenage suicide bomber blew herself up but caused no other casualties near a mosque late Monday in the northern Nigerian city of Kano. It's the latest attack by suspected Boko Haram insurgents and followed Sunday night's twin bombings near a mosque and a restaurant in the central city of Jos that left at least 44 dead. They follow days of attacks the United States estimates has killed some 200 people. This is VOA News. Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras is set to offer new proposals on ways out of the country's current fiscal crisis at a European summit scheduled later Tuesday. The meeting follows Sunday's resounding vote of no by Greeks in a referendum on European bailout demands. Pressure is mounting worldwide for a solution. George Osborne is the British Chancellor of the Exchequer.
This is a critical moment in the economic crisis in Greece. No one should be under any illusions. The situation risks going from bad to worse. Britain will be affected the longer the Greek crisis lasts and the worse it gets. There is no easy way out, but even at the 11th hour, we urge the Eurozone leaders and Greece to find a sustainable solution.
Greece's creditors are demanding new austerity measures before any new Eurozone funds are made available. Greeks are literally running out of money. Government controls on withdrawals have been extended through Wednesday. Global stocks have trended lower. Even as German and French leaders Monday declared the door is still open for more negotiations with Athens, European officials did not immediately change their stance against easing terms of a possible new bailout in the wake of the 61% no vote in that referendum. President Obama says the fight against Islamic State radicals will be long, hard-fought, and require more than American military might to win. He met Monday with Defense Secretary Ashton Carter and other top military commanders and intelligence officials.
ISIL is opportunistic and it is nimble. In many places in Syria and Iraq, including urban areas, it's dug in among innocent civilian populations. It will take time to root them out, and doing so must be the job of local forces on the ground with training and air support from our coalition.
Mr. Obama's comments followed a weekend of intensified airstrikes by a U.S.-led coalition against militants who've taken large control of northern and western Iraq and eastern Syria. In Yemen, at least 45 were killed in an airstrike by Saudi-led coalition warplanes in Fayouj, north of the southern port city of Aden. Dozens of civilians were wounded. The fighting in Yemen pits Shia Houthi rebels and troops loyal to former President Ali Abdullah Saleh against loyalists to former President Abd Rabbo Mansour Hadi. Nearly 3,000 have died in the fighting since March. Dozens of Kenyan anti-homosexual protesters rallied Monday in Nairobi, warning President Obama not to push a pro-gay agenda when he visits the country later this month. The march organized by the Evangelical Alliance of Kenya. Deputy President William Ruto had a similar message back in May, when U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry visited the country. Mr. Obama visits his ancestral home in other African countries July 24 to 28. Hundreds of thousands of worshippers gathered in Ecuador Monday for a chance to hear a mass celebrated by Pope Francis. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi's ruling party welcomes East African leaders' call to delay July 15 presidential election, but with clarification.
What we can say in our party is that everything we have to do, even if we respect decisions taken by these heads of state, we have to respect also our constitution.
Pascal Yambendat is chairman of Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party. Zimbabwe's outspoken information minister loses his job in a mini-cabinet reshuffle. Burkina Faso's prime minister denies resignation rumors. Boko Haram continues to wreak havoc despite President Buhari's campaign promise. And South Sudan's army says it recaptures Malakal, capital of Upper Nile State.
SPLA have established control over Malakal this morning. And the operation to provide full security to Malakal is continuing.
Colonel Flebagwo is the spokesman for South Sudan's military, and we'll tell you about a new film on South Sudan's internal refugees. Those stories plus Marco Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party says it accepts with some condition the call by East African leaders to delay the presidential election by 2 weeks from July 15 to the July 30th. Party chairman Pascal Yabenda says any decision to delay the vote must ensure that Burundi's constitution, which mandates the presidential election cannot go beyond July 26, will not be violated.
Yes, it has been taken a decision of delaying these presidential elections. But what we can say in our party is that everything we have to do, even if we respect decisions taken by these heads of state, we have to respect also our constitution. So we will see. We will sit down and see what can be done by respecting our constitution.
What part of the constitution do you want to respect?
You know, it is said that the presidential election can't be beyond 26th July because 26th July will be the last date which is mentioned in our constitution, because from there it is 1 month at the end of the term of the actual president. So which means that we can't go beyond. If they talk about 30th July, it means that we will be beyond that date, which is not possible.
In the meantime, we hear that the president is campaigning and the elections are supposed to be next week.
Yes, no one stopped him campaigning. He has started to campaign. This summit took place when he has started campaigning, which means that he continues campaigning. No one stopped him.
We hear that your ruling party, the CNDD-FDD, has told the United Nations mediator, Mr. Abdoulaye Bathily, to leave.
You know, he came, he didn't present himself to the authorities of Burundi. He came, he started working without being received by the authorities of Burundi, so which is not possible. If you come in a country, even if you are sent by UN, at least you present yourself to the authorities. He didn't do that. He started working, he started taking decision of postponing or delaying elections. He came with a hidden agenda. That's why we said, no, UN must look for another one. Fortunately, now we have President Museveni who will be doing that work.
So would your party be willing to work with President Museveni of Uganda?
Yes, you know, he is a wise man who knows very well what is happening in Burundi. He knows very well Burundi. He knows very well Burundians. We hope that he will do well.
Let me get your reaction. The general who led this military coup against President Nkurunziza is now saying that President Nkurunziza can listen to only force to get him out.
He failed. He failed on 30th May. He can't succeed this time. That one is nothing.
He wants people to organize to resist the government.
He can't. He can't. Our population is very determined to fight for the country. He can't do anything.
Pascal Nyabenda is the chair of Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. South Sudan's military said Monday it recaptured the town of Malakal, capital of Upper Nile State, which was seized late last month by rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. Malakal is the gateway to South Sudan's last remaining major oil fields. Army spokesman Colonel Philip Agwo says the rebels fled into different directions and that the operation to provide full security to Malakal is ongoing.
SPLA have established control over Malakal this morning, and the operation to provide full security to Malakal is continuing.
This is an indication of more fighting. People were hoping now that peace is on the way in South Sudan.
More fighting has been declared by the rebels some weeks ago when they attacked Malakal. The rebels have rejected peace in the conference in a place called Pagak weeks ago when they have decided to opt for more violence and rejected ceasefire. So the SPLA has a constitutional legitimacy to fight, provide security and safety to the people and territorial integrity of South Sudan.
Is your government still willing for a peace negotiation?
If you follow clearly the last attempt by the Kenyan government, the government of South Sudan, and of course the army support and implement the security policies of the government, supported the peace bill in Nairobi, which was rejected by Riek Machar.
They have imposed sanctions on at least three of your generals. What do you think about that?
The sanctions should be geared towards those who are rejecting the peace and ceasefire. If you follow clearly what happened in Nairobi and Addis Ababa, you will identify the obstacle and the causes of obstacle in the peace process in South Sudan, not the commanders. The commanders are just implementers, the policies that are agreed upon. And if the rebels are rejecting an agreement, how do you blame the field commanders?
You say you are in control of Malakal. What happened to the rebels? Were there any casualties?
The rebels are fleeing southward and westward of Malakal, and the SPLA is doing the pursuing.
Now, the rebels have indicated that they shot down one of your helicopter's gunship on Sunday.
That is a white lie. There is no any involvement of Ugandan in Upper Nile. SPLA have Air Force capability in terms of gunship to hit anywhere in Upper Nile. However, there is no any gunship shot down by the rebels. If you see clearly the picture that is placed in the website, it's just from a Photoshop. A combination of different parts of different planes that landed in different parts of Africa or the world. So that is just a mere fabrication.
Ugandan troops are still supporting your military, and this is one sticky point for the rebels, that in order for there to be peace, Ugandan troops must leave South Sudan.
Yes, the Ugandan are in Juba and in Bor based on a bilateral agreement, and each country is entitled to their sovereign decisions. They will go when the agreement is expired. And that agreement can expire any time, is renewable, is based on the agreement between Juba and Kampala, and that has nothing to do with the causes of the rebellion. The rebellion is known by Riek Machar why he's fighting, why he's causing all this suffering.
Colonel Philip Agwo is the spokesman for South Sudan's military. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. The Prime Minister of Burkina Faso, Yacouba Isaac Zida, says he has not resigned, contrary to rumors and what the local news media have been reporting in recent days. The reports have circulated amid a dispute involving the Prime Minister and the Presidential Guard, known as RSP. Mariama Diallo has more from Dakar.
The Prime Minister says he's still in charge and that journalists should be more professional in their reporting. Mr. Zida spoke to reporters ahead of an official visit to Ivory Coast. Mr. Zida says he wants this opportunity to say what was reported in the press yesterday is not true. There is no crisis within the government. He says the press should verify this kind of information before broadcasting that kind of news. The comments follow recent reports that shots were fired into the air from inside the RSP camp, allegedly to protest the questioning of two RSP leaders about rumored attempts to arrest the prime minister. Mr. Zida says the threats were real. Mr. Zida has threatened to disband the regiment that both he and former Prime Minister Blaise Compaoré once belonged to. But Zida has since changed his tone and said the group is important to security. Separately, Mr. Zida said it's very important that elections occur in October so that voters can elect the president of their choice. Security Minister Colonel Auguste Denis Berry, who is accompanying Mr. Zida, agreed. He says there is no hidden agenda by the transitional government to delay or cancel the elections. He says his ministry is taking necessary precautions for a safe ballot.
Les mécanismes, les dispositifs donc sont en place déjà pour encadrer.
Berry says the mechanisms are in place to make sure the elections take place in the most efficient manner. All the security aspects concerning the electoral process are being looked into at the moment, he says. The elections will come a year after Mr. Compaoré was swept from power in a civilian uprising against his bid to seek a fifth term. Mr. Compaoré was one of Africa's longest ruling leaders. In Dakar, Mariama Diallo for VOA News.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Tuesday, July 7th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Radio Banga, FM 96.5 in Bong County, Central Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, and Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. In the past week, Boko Haram has slaughtered men in villages and bombed churches and mosques across Nigeria's north, despite the new president's promises to stem this six-year-old insurgency. Chris Stein reports on whether Nigerians are losing patience with President Muhammadu Buhari.
As a candidate, Muhammadu Buhari campaigned on ending the Boko Haram insurgency. But in the months since he entered office, the group's violence has shown no sign of abating. The past week of violence saw the group lay siege to a village outside the Borno state capital, Maiduguri, kill more than 145 people in villages elsewhere in the state, and blow up worshippers at a church in the town of Potiskum in neighboring Yobe state. Bashir Abdullahi is a resident of the north-central city of Jos, where suspected Boko Haram bombers targeted a mosque and restaurant Sunday, killing at least 44 people. Abdullahi says he is satisfied with President Buhari's measures against the group.
I seriously believe he's up to the task and he's going to deal with them.
Mr. Buhari set high expectations for how he would handle the group. Before the March presidential vote, his All Progressives Congress Party put up billboards around the country that read, "We will defeat Boko Haram." If President Buhari does not do that, University of Abuja lecturer Abubakar Kerry says he risks losing credibility with Nigerians.
Most Nigerians expected something drastic, something dramatic, something conquered on the ground. They didn't expect this set of bombings across the country. They think that, okay, by now, Boko Haram should truly be a thing of the past. They don't seem to be impressed by the handling of the situation so far.
The spokesman for President Buhari, Femi Adesina, says the president is working on a plan to tackle Boko Haram that will involve troops from neighboring countries.
The framework, the machinery, is being set in motion for a final onslaught against Boko Haram, and it will happen.
President Buhari has called for help from abroad, and he may be getting it. The president will visit the White House later this month, and the United States' Deputy Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, is visiting Nigeria and Niger this week. Boko Haram is expected to be on the agenda of both visits. Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
Zimbabwe's outspoken information minister Jonathan Moyo lost his position on Monday in a mini cabinet reshuffle by President Robert Mugabe that saw Moyo being moved to the less powerful higher education ministry. Zimbabwe Independent editor Dumisani Moleya said the reshuffle was clearly targeting Moyo.
It seems like it's a politically motivated move rather than a decision that is informed by the need to improve the team and improve delivery in terms of social services, running economy and managing the country. It's quite clearly more centered around moving Jonathan Moyo away from the Minister of Information to the Minister of Higher Education something that we know in terms of the ZANU-PF factional dynamics. This is not the first time it was tried. Sometime last December, the ZANU-PF faction headed by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, they wanted to move into that ministry. So finally, they succeeded. So it's just a calculated political move rather than a delivery-oriented decision.
But why is it that the Mnangagwa faction might be no longer at ease with Moyo controlling information?
Well, basically because post the ZANU-PF Congress in December 2014, which is last December, Moyo quite clearly, in terms of how he has used the control and direction of the state media, he was not Broadcasting Corporation, he was in papers and other associated platforms. It has been seen to be hostile, really or perceived to be hostile to the faction led by Mnangagwa. So we were not comfortable with him remaining in that position. We saw that sometime soon after Congress when Minister Josiah Ogwe did say Mnangagwa was coming from men. It was not more directly responded to that, but it was the Herald, the flagship of the state controlled media, saying, rebuffing that. Basically, that indicated the attitude of the minister in charge at that particular time. It was Moyo. And then we saw Moyo, and most recently in BBC, contesting even just the claim that Mnangagwa could be the next in line to succeed Mugabe. So his attitude towards the Mnangagwa group would have influenced his removal from there, because they see him as somebody who is not an ally anymore, as it was in the past, but as a threat to their ambition.
That was Zimbabwe Independent editor Dumisani Moleya. He was speaking from Harare with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service. In 2012, Sudanese filmmaker Hajush Kuka went to make a documentary about among civil war refugees in Sudan's Blue Nile and Nuba Mountains region. What he found surprised him. Music was helping to save people from bombing raids by their own government. VOA's Caroline Weaver has more.
Filmmaker Hajush Kuka spent 2 years in civil war zones among displaced people in his native Sudan to make his new documentary, Beats of the Antonov. The title refers to two kinds of beats. One is the beat of the music the refugees make in their camps.
It's beautiful, creative music. They all come together and they start dancing and they start playing this music, and the music allows them to be as a community. So it allows them to heal.
He says the players are always creating new songs about their experiences, played on homemade instruments made from things like plates and motorbike brake belts.
Because they ran away without anything. When you're running away, you're not thinking, I'm going to take an instrument. You're thinking, I'm going to carry a baby. And so they just devised these instruments. They're the same old instruments, but actually made out of found objects in the camp.
The other beat in Beats of the Antonov is the beat of death. Shrapnel bombs dropped on the southern Blue Nile and Nuba regions by Sudan's government, using old Soviet Antonov planes. Around the camps, young players stay up all night making music to keep watch for the buzz of oncoming planes.
And there'd be all these different groups that are just playing until the morning. And if they hear the bomb, they just wake up everybody.
Kuka says Sudan's civil war is rooted in the government's forcing an Arab Islamic national identity throughout Sudan, despite the country's 57 ethnicities and 150 different languages.
So Sudan became this extreme case where you have all these people who feel marginalized, and whatever they try, they can only become Arab to a certain extent. They come to the ceiling, they can't pass it. And to come to the solution is not a simple solution. And that's why we need the discussion to talk about it. But the solution is to create a Sudan that celebrates the 57 different ethnicities, that every single one of them is part of being Sudanese.
Kuka says he thinks the war against Sudan's mostly darker-skinned civilians in the south would end if President Omar al-Bashir were arrested as a war criminal. But until then, he has little hope that peace will come soon. Beats of the Antonov won the People's Choice Award at the Toronto International Film Festival and will air on the POV series on U.S. public television in August. Carolyn Weaver, VOA News, New York.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak After Sports News, we begin at the World Student Games in Gwangju, South Korea. In men's basketball, Estonia beat Mozambique 87-47, while in the women's game, Hungary dismissed Mozambique 70-44 as Taipei outplayed Uganda 100-55. Today, Tuesday, Mozambique plays South Korea in the men's contest as Uganda face Brazil and Mozambique engage Canada in women's basketball. Meanwhile, France beat South Africa 3-0 in women's football on Monday. Today, South Africa encounter Mexico in men's football. Turning to rugby, hosts Uganda beat Ivory Coast 40-11 in their opening encounter at the Confederation of African Rugby Division 1B Africa Cup in Kampala on Sunday. In other matches, Madagascar prevailed over Botswana 36-18, while Senegal overpowered Mauritius 42-3. Elsewhere, Zimbabwe beat visitors Tunisia 18-8 in a Confederation of African Rugby Division 1A tie in Harare on Saturday. Hosts Lesotho edged Swaziland 13-10 in a friendly match played in Maseru. Moving on to volleyball, Kenya edged hosts Algeria by 3-2 as Mexico outplayed Australia 3-1 at the Women's World Volleyball Grand Prix in Algiers on Sunday. Early on Saturday, Kenya beat Australia 3-0 as Mexico pipped Algeria 3-2. While on Friday, Kenya outclassed Mexico 3-0 as Algeria edged Australia 3-2. Turning to basketball, Egypt beat South Korea 101-88 to place 11th at the men's World Under 19 Basketball Championships in Heraklion, Greece on Sunday, while China dismissed Tunisia 80-68 in the 15th place playoff. Finally, in athletics, Kenyan Kenneth Mungara clocked 2 hours 8 minutes and 42 seconds to emerge victorious at the Gold Coast Airport Marathon in Australia on Sunday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. This is our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, July 7th.
Good morning. This is William Koku from Morocco, Liberia. The continued attack by Boko Haram in Nigeria, with the latest being Jos City, is alarming and unacceptable. I believe it is time that ECOWAS, the AU, convene an emergency meeting to deal with this terrorist group calling themselves Boko Haram. Thank you. Have a great day.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigeria's army has released more than 180 people it had previously suspected of being members of the militant group Boko Haram amid a new wave of violence by the group. Nigeria Chief of Army Staff, Lieutenant General Kenneth Minima, said the suspects, who included men, women, and children, were in army detention cells for months. He said they were released Monday to Borno's state government after an investigation confirmed their innocence. Nigeria is facing a deadly string of violence blamed on Boko Haram militants that has left more than 200 people dead in the past week. And hundreds of thousands of worshippers gather in Ecuador on Monday for a chance to hear Mass celebrated by Pope Francis. That is it for this Tuesday, July 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clutton and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa.
The political crisis in South Sudan is taking a heavy toll on the nation's citizens. Nearly 2 million people have been displaced due to the fighting between supporters of President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar. Tune in on Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.